This time on Weather Brains, frigid cold set to invade much of the U.S.
In some parts of the country, this might be the coldest air in 10 or maybe even 20 years.
Where might wintry weather strike? James Spann has a guess.
The I-40 corridor sure looks sweet for that to me.
For folks in Alabama, Bill Murray says, look out.
We'll probably see some single digits, I would imagine, around here.
Also this time, you run a big airport. You face a big snowstorm.
We were getting probably here at the airport, it was between 2 and 3 inches per hour at times.
Kevin Selly takes us on a Weather Brains Extra, digging out at DIA, how Denver International Airport handles major winter storms. Oh, and Heidi, the Weather Brains crew, is thinking of you.
Where has Heidi Cullen gone? She will not return our calls.
It's all coming up. Welcome to episode number 53 of Weather Brains, the weather netcast that's all about weather. I'm David Black from Birmingham, Alabama. Part of the Weather Company with me this time, James Spann, the lead meteorologist from ABC 3340 in Birmingham, also on board this time. Brian Peters, as well from ABC 3340, along with Bill Murray and Kevin Selly out there in Texas. Hey, James, what's happening?
Hey, it's cold out there.
It's cold. Yeah, it seems like that's the story everywhere. Kevin, what's the situation out there in the southern plains, the great state of Texas? You guys freezing too?
David, I am so cold. I'm just going to go ahead and forecast sunny and 85 for the next 3 weeks because I'm not thinking clearly. It's so cold.
Man, tell you what, we got to get past this, guys. But it sounds as if the whole southern plains into the southeastern U.S. are just going to be frigid for a while. James, is that an accurate portrayal?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's just a matter of how cold. It's clear that it will be cold, and that there's evidence that for some parts of the country, not everybody, but for some parts of the country, this might be the coldest air in 10 or maybe even 20 years. Analog years for this are 1994 and 1985, and both of those years, it really, really got cold. In fact, I was out there in Kevin Selly country in 85 working for Channel 4. I remember that outbreak very well. So I would fully expect to see maybe places like Chicago not even reaching zero at some point in coming days. And places down here in the southern U.S. hitting the single digits. In fact, we had that this morning. The co-op observer up at Hamilton at 9 degrees up there.
So this is way past just the kind of weather we talk about passively. We're talking really dangerous cold here.
I think you could say that, yeah. I mean, and of course, the problem that we've got to deal with is what do you do with the storms that come along in the southern periphery of all of that? And those are a nightmare. To me, the easiest part of forecasting, it's trying to recognize the pattern, and you can make those broad statements. It's going to be awfully cold, and we're going to have storms that will impact parts of the southern U.S., and then you get down to the nitty-gritty. Well, where's the rain going to be and the snow and the ice? And we're down to figuring that out on this midweek system here. So, you know, Kevin starts them all and sends them our way, so we'll let him figure it out.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very little.
Well, you guys know, it's hard when you look to the south or southwest, and you guys are looking out over the Gulf where there's not much data coming, and we look out over Mexico for where that stuff just aloft is coming. You can't tell how warm that's going to be, so the rain, snow, sleet, freezing rain line is always a challenge, guys.
Bill Murray, let me put you on the spot. You've been writing some forecasts along with Mr. Spann and J.B. Elliott for the southeast for Alabama. Are we just still dealing with this monster polar vortex over the poles in Canada? Is that what's just spinning all this cold air down our way or helping to?
Yeah, David, I don't think we've seen anything yet. I think the temperatures over the weekend and into the first part of next week here are going to be brutal. You know, I think I called for 22 conservatively, I think, Sunday morning, but by this morning it was pretty evident that it was going to be in the teens, and we'll probably see some single digits, I would imagine, around here. You know, by that time. So it's going to be quite cold for sure.
So for folks across the southern plains, maybe some Texas into Arkansas, Tennessee, there are going to be some days where getting above freezing may just be a dream, it sounds like.
I'm not convinced we'll get above freezing where we are in Alabama on Saturday. It's going to be that cold. And I think we'll have a nice little snow strip developing on the northern periphery of this precipitation shield at midweek, David. The I-40 corridor sure looks sweet for that to me. Little Rock, Memphis, Nashville, Knoxville. A lot of people headed to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, the Great Smoky Mountains. I think they might have a nice snow cover up there by the end of the week.
Well, it'll be pretty to look at, but I think if we have our choice of just staying put at home and hopefully keeping our power, I'll go for that. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Kevin, you did this piece earlier with folks up in the plains about being out of power for a long time. I'm sure that that is still a problem. You know, we haven't been talking about it, but that's probably still a big issue for folks in certain parts of the country.
And even in Nebraska, which is where we did that piece before, they were pretty confident it was going to be, you know, even a couple of months before some of the outlying areas could get off of generators and back on to the actual power grid.
You know, one job I don't really think I would ever want is to work for a power company and be a line repair technician. That just, I don't know, you just got to be tough. You got to have a certain thick hide to be out there repairing lines in ice and single degree digits. I don't know how those people do that.
Have you ever seen the video? I've seen this maybe on the Discovery Channel or something, where they go out and work on those lines from helicopters, and one guy sits on the runner, and he's got some sort of a grounding stick or something, and they just ease him up there, and he gets out. That's just crazy fascinating.
Well, whatever they get paid, it's probably not enough for some
Good
of that
point.
Work. Very dangerous, but we appreciate what they do, and I hope that folks in other parts of the country who are doing without electricity don't have to go without that much longer. Hey, a little bit of unfinished business before we get to our main item for this netcast. The unfinished business being from the previous week when the national, or I guess I should say international, media firestorm was brewing at its hottest. One firestorm pitting Mr. Spann against Dr. Heidi Cullen of the Weather Channel. We're not going to go into everything that went on last week. Everybody knows it. Everybody's been there. I think everybody has the T-shirt. But one thing we did do was to extend an invitation repeatedly, I might add, to Dr. Cullen to appear on the show. She did not join us for the previous week's netcast. We were hoping she'd be able to, but we extended the invitation again and said we'd love to have her on in time to be with us for this netcast. So I thought I'd do just a quick little follow-up for you guys and let you know that Dr. Cullen never called. So there will be no comments from Dr. Cullen, but rest assured that is her choice and not ours. We did extend the invitation, and she just chose that it was better not to deal with us or not to talk with us. So we go on from there. So, James, has the firestorm cooled off a little bit, or are you still getting requests for interviews?
Well, I still get a few of those but it's definitely calmed down. I did a radio show today in Washington, D.C., and some guy in San Francisco, a reporter, called. And you know, I'll do a few of those, but we got so much in the plate right now for us. It's almost like a distraction. We've got the Storm Alert Tour, the annual tour we do across the state. That begins Thursday night, and we're not even ready for that. And then we got these winter storm and ice threats, and, you know, it's easy to get your eye off the ball, and if you're going to play the ball game, you can't do that. So I think we're going to let that kind of fade away and take care of business here.
I kind of figure, James, with everything going on with the weather across the southeast, not just Alabama, but all the big questions about what's going to happen in all the southeastern states, that you just really didn't want to visit this much more and kind of hope it'll settle off on its own. People know what the positions are of everybody involved and all that's been covered, so we'll go on. But the one thing that I did want to do prior to closing this out, so to speak, is just to let Dr. Cullen know that we were thinking about her with a little something that we put together. Dr. Cullen, this is for you.
Where has Heidi Cullen gone? Off into the warming sun. Where has Heidi Cullen gone? We have no clue. Where has Heidi gone off to? Is it the inconvenient truth? When will she ever learn? When will she ever learn? Where has Heidi Cullen gone? She
will not return our calls. From her lips we hoped for more. Maybe she's helping Al Gore. Where has Heidi Cullen gone? James Spann's got her on the run. When will she ever learn? When will she ever learn? The air is heating up, she rants. Spoken from Sundance. When will she ever call? Maybe she won't at all.
There you go, Dr. Cullen. We want to say thanks to John Bird, Birdworks, and also the famous guys at the Rick and Bubba Radio Show, good friends of Weather Brains, for helping make that possible.
Exceptionally well done.
And also, we'd like to thank J.B. Elliott for singing background vocals on that song.
J.B., good job.
Great job with that.
Yeah, you're joining us late, but that's okay. J.B., you did a tremendous job on that.
Background vocals is the only thing I'm good at.
Well, you handled it well, so we appreciate your work on that. In any event, winter weather, the big story across much of the central United States and also the Southeast. We have put together something, Kevin Selly has, that I think really helps bring home some of the work that goes into preparing for Old Man Winter's furious attacks. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, David, you know, keeping the sixth busiest airport in the nation and the 11th busiest in the world running is a big job on any day. But when you try and operate that airport in the middle of a blizzard during the Christmas holiday rush, and you are a major hub for one of the busiest airlines and biggest airlines in the country, that is not just another day. So in this Weather Brains Extra, digging out at DIA, we wanted to find out how Denver International Airport prepares for winter, those big snowstorms, and a bunch of people sleeping over.
If you have ever had to shovel snow, you know that it is tough, back-breaking work just getting the front walkway clean, not to mention the driveway. Now, imagine for a minute shoveling a driveway from Denver, Colorado to San Francisco, California, and you begin to get an idea of what the folks at the Denver International Airport have had to do this season. And that was just the first storm. And they are a little tired.
We are. I think, yeah, like I was saying, I've got a headache, and I bet Terry's joining me on that. We buy Tylenol in bulk now.
Stephen Lee is Airport Operations Manager and Terry Blue, Aviation Operations Manager for the airports, and we ask them about what they do to get ready for the winter season, and they look at all the weather sources they can.
We kind of look at that Farmer's Almanac sometimes to get an idea, because it seems to be fairly accurate sometimes.
Tell me the different weather sources that you look at on a seasonal basis or a weekly basis or a couple weeks.
Okay. Well, basically, we kind of look at the overall forecasts from the Weather Service, of course, but also we have a weather service that the city pays for, kind of a private contract type of a deal. And they give us some projections. Longer term, we know those are just for planning purposes, kind of make us feel good or bad, whichever way it goes, but just so that we kind of have an idea of what to expect. But they're not very accurate, so we really have to wait until the time comes for our specific planning.
Did you tell me that you also have some relationship with United, since they have a hub there with that?
Yes, and what we do is we have our contract forecaster. They have a contracted forecaster also. It's in Chicago, though, that person is based. But we're held to the National Weather Service. We've got to ultimately go by what the National Weather Service tells us.
Oh, interesting.
And specifically the aviation forecaster.
So get as much information as you can, but at the end of the day, we go, at least in the short term, we go with the Weather Service.
Correct.
All right, then. Well, let's go back before the pre-Christmas storm.
Okay.
You look at the long-range computer models start to come out, and you start to see the possibility of a sizable storm, as opposed to maybe just a little bit of snow. We've talked about where you're getting that information, but once someone says, hey, we're 2 weeks out, here's something that looks kind of interesting, What are you going to do as far as early preparation with regard to that?
The first thing we do is we start just watching the weather closer. I mean, we just start gathering all those sources of information and comparing them. But then at the airport, what we start doing is looking at things like our equipment, making sure that it's all up and running or going to be by the time we expect the snow to hit. We start going over our plans just to review them, make sure that we know what we're planning to do. And in this case, we would consider it a snow emergency, mm-hmm. Which bumps us up to a different level in our plan. The way we do snow removal with that equipment is, depending on what type of snow it is, that determines the mix of equipment that's out there on a runway.
Oh, now detail that. Type of snow, tell me more.
Okay, when it's heavy snow... Well, actually, let's back up and start. Even if it's going to be falling, some of the planning that we do is look at the type of snow it's going to be. In our forecasts, when we're talking to the weather service, we'll ask them when it's going to start, what the lows are going to be, what temperature it's going to be at the time it starts snowing. And that's kind of a key factor for us right there.
As well as surface temperatures.
Right. Because that, if it's going to be warm, surface temperatures and warm temperatures, you know, around 32 degrees, we can put chemical down on the runways, and that will buy us time, and it will also help as the snow develops. If it packs down and turns into more of a hard pack kind of a condition, when it's all done, it'll break up easier for us, and we can just scrape it right off.
You're actually then, in that case, you're attacking it from the underside, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Now, if it's going to stay a warmer temperature, sometimes we can stay ahead of it just using chemical. You know, put the chemical down, it melts it as it comes down, it drains off the runway, and then when the chemical's diluted and no longer working, put a little bit more down and it'll do the same thing. That'll work on light snows without a whole lot of wind, to where sometimes we can take care of a whole small snowstorm just by doing that. Now, once it starts getting to a rate of maybe a half an inch an hour, then that doesn't quite work. It still helps us keep the braking action up on the runways, but it won't stop it from accumulating completely. So then we get out with the equipment and start moving the snow. We end up with, if it's going to be a cold storm, on the other hand, or if it's going to be excessive winds, we try not to use that chemical at the start of the storm.
And why is that?
If it's going to be a nice cold surface temperature below freezing, and if it's going to be just an overall cold condition, then it's easier to just have the snow blow off rather than accumulate on that chemical.
Yeah, the chemical kind of has a tendency to grab it, if you will.
Oh. Yeah, especially in those windy conditions. It'll as the wind blows the snow across, it'll catch on that chemical and just saturate it much faster than it would otherwise. And if you keep that surface dry, it'll just continue blowing right across the runway.
And so the pre-Christmas storm, it came down pretty hard. And at some point in time, in your mind, you've got to go, okay, this isn't just a little bit of snow.
Right.
Explain that pre-Christmas storm to us and how it unfolded.
The closer it got, the snowfall forecast amounts continued to grow incrementally. And we knew right away we were going to be going into a snow emergency, which is a level above, say, our standard snow storms, where we call a snow alert, to where essentially an awful lot of the non-essential personnel are held over at the airport. Oh. So staffing becomes critical, and we want to make sure we've got an awful lot of folks at the airport, as well as the equipment, like Steve mentioned.
If we're anticipating 6 inches or more of snow, or snow with high winds, mm-hmm. that's when we would go into that snow emergency for ourselves.
And is that the highest level of alertness?
Yes. Okay. And what that does for us is we meet with all of the airlines and get on the same page with them in terms of what the forecast says, what they're expecting, what we're expecting. We talk about whether or not they're going to cancel flights, because that has a big impact on our ability to remove the snow. If they cut back on flights in anticipation of a severe snowstorm, it allows us a better opportunity to go out and clean the runways and the ramps and taxiways.
And how much of that was done, that sort of pre-cancellation, I'll call it, in this event?
Actually, none, unfortunately. So we knew the day before when we had that meeting that we were going to have some problems, at least in terms of delays.
And that was entirely due to the Christmas holiday, correct? The airline's load factors were so high that they couldn't afford right off the bat to cancel any flights.
Right.
And what's the ramp up to the close? You have six runways, is that correct?
Correct.
And did you step them down, or what was the process to close the airport?
As the snow got heavier, it came later than anticipated also. We expected it originally to start late evening, the day before it actually started. It kept getting pushed back, and then by early morning, about probably 5:30.
Yeah, it was right around 4:30, 5:30, somewhere in that hour that it started falling.
And then we just started our normal snow removal process, which was to just move between those different runways and hitting taxiways as we go and the ramps at the same time. And by the time 7 o'clock rolled around, it was too heavy to continue that and keep it all open. So we basically just start shrinking the area that we focus on for our snow removal. We quit doing snow removal on the runways that run east and west, because we didn't anticipate using them at all during the storm with the high winds out of the north. We just focused then on our four north-south runways. But with the high winds, once they started in too, through the day, that became a factor. We were getting probably, we haven't gotten firm figures on this yet here at the airport, but it was between 2 and 3 inches per hour at times. But then the high winds...
A significant part of the entire storm, visibility was less than 1,000 feet.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of the Achilles heel.
Yeah, and at the time we closed, it was more like 10 feet. You know, it was bad. And the crews, once it got to the point where they couldn't see to remove the snow, especially when they're working around airplanes on the ramp, Terry was out there.
I was. Visibility was extremely poor. One of the main concerns for us as well is our ability to respond with our fire equipment to any potential accident, aircraft accident, or et cetera. We call it ARF response. And with the visibility the way it was and some of the snow banks or windrows, depending on which term you want to use, were becoming very significant. We were having some of our snow plows get stuck. It was becoming quite obvious that our ability to respond to an emergency was becoming diminished, and that's when we had to play the safety card.
And remember, this is not just a matter of running a plow down a runway. There are taxiways, terminal areas, gates, de-icing pads, baggage areas, FAA navigational aids, and runway lights that stick up 2 feet above the surface that they are trying not to knock over. And you can't just plow the snow to the side. You have to put it someplace.
You know, if you've got 6, 8, 10 inches of snow out there and you run a snow team across, they very quickly will make very, very large snow banks, and which become very heavy to move, and then you can't get airplanes across to those. So,
and they're hard to see when those conditions hit, too, with that blowing snow. You look down on those, you'd be driving across a ramp, and really all you see is white, and you're doing fine because you're in an area that's plowed, and then all of a sudden you get to one of those, say, a 3-foot bank of snow that you can't see, and all of a sudden you're in a 3-foot bank instead of on 2 inches of snow.
Mm. Or possibly face-to-face with a 747.
Yes.
Mr. Blue, is it you go outside and stand there and say, I can't see it? Tell me the exact process that somebody says, okay, we're done.
Well, our aviation operations managers are out on the airfield, and we had aircraft still trying to depart and de-ice. They were struggling with the visibility and the snow amounts trying to get to the de-ice pads. Then during their de-ice process, they were struggling to stay clean, and the holdover time based on the type of treatment they were getting was extremely short, and their ability to make it to a runway and depart was very slim. The odds of them making it in that amount of time was very tough. So being out there and seeing the conditions, seeing what our reduced capabilities were, the operations managers discussed with management at that time what our abilities were and made the safety recommendation that we should strongly consider closing this airport, at which time, you know, that decision went forward.
And once they closed, then they had to deal with the people in the airport. DIA actually has relationships with area hotels for such events and can even offer special discounts. Now, follow this problem for a minute. Wednesday night, the entire city of Denver was under a snow emergency. Airport officials were able to take some people via bus to hotels, and each bus had a snowplow going along with it to help it get through. But many passengers decided to stay put because the airlines, expecting to resume operations Thursday morning, told passengers, first come, first serve, getting out. And that led to nearly 5,000 people, some of them sleeping in the ticket lines, spending the night not at Grandma's house, but at an airport that was desperately trying to dig out.
And what we were trying to do in order to open was just clear off enough so that we could push an airplane back and have it taxi just one direction traffic, not allowing anybody else to push back in front of them, but to taxi from that gate to a de-ice pad. And in order just to clear that amount of space, like Terry described, you don't just clear the gear tracks. You've got to clear enough so that their engines aren't going to suck in that pile of snow that's out there.
Oh.
Yeah.
And in fact, clear up through this weekend, we've had contractors out here constantly hauling snow, just snow removal operations.
Where do they take it?
We've used up most of our dumps that we normally use, and so we've actually closed a taxiway and a de-ice pad that we
and an outlying
using.
Parking area.
Really?
I mean, we're getting creative as to where we're putting snow
and we're trying to melt it away and that sort of thing. We haven't had any natural melting, so we're trying to.
Is it all still on the property?
Yes. Yeah.
I wanted to go back to you've got 5,000 people in there, and this is what leaps to mind, and it sounds kind of silly, but 5,000 people are there for 2 days, and you've got your vendors, but there are certain needs and services that must be met.
Yeah.
Did y'all have, enough toilet paper?
Yeah. Actually, that was one of our bright spots, is we had plenty of that.
But now, that's all covered in the, when we knew the snow was coming.
You loaded up.
Exactly. We have our snow emergency briefing to where we get all the tenants, all the air carriers, all the contractors. Like Steve mentioned, we get them all together in one big meeting, and we go right down the checklist where, concessionaires and et cetera, has everybody got the food supply they need? Have they brought in everything they need?
Will they stay open longer?
Exactly. Will they have staffing? And, folks will say, yes, we're keeping people over. TSA, for instance, yes, we are keeping people over so that the checkpoints are open so people can move to and from the terminal to the concourse.
Yeah, that was an important part, too. In the past, we've had events where we learned that if you try to keep all those people in the main terminal where, they haven't had to go through screening, then there are only a limited number of restaurants and shops there. Mm-hmm. They run out very, very quickly. So by the TSA allowing people to be screened and go back out to the concourses, even though they don't have a ticket for a flight that's leaving, they can go to the restaurants on the concourses. And so having pre-coordinated with those different restaurants to stay open throughout this event, they ended up having the food. But then people end up running out of money, too. So we had Red Cross out here to help pass out some supplies. They had some supplies out.
Baby formula and water bottles and stuff along those lines.
Yeah.
All right, then what are each of you going to tell folks who have never been stranded in an airport?
They definitely need to somehow have some basic comfort kinds of supplies. I think the people that travel a lot tend to carry things like toothbrush and toothpaste with them. Change of clothes, one change of clothes and that kind of thing. Those comfort types of things and medicines are what I think are probably the most critical for people to take with them.
Now, the only two things I would recommend they bring with them is patience and a sense of humor, and to realize that we are doing absolutely everything we can for them. Our passengers and customers are always our number one concern.
I can tell you, too, just that attitude thing, it was noticeable. Some of the people that just settled in and they made some lifelong friends, actually, while they were out there. They formed little groups and got to know each other pretty well. And that's probably pretty important, too, because even though we do our best to take care of people, when it comes down to the details, we just are not able to to provide some of those comforts that, that people need. And a lot of times they can help each other out quite a bit. You know, our hats off to the people that work through these storms, but the people that were stranded in Terminal deserve that same kind of congratulations and being able to come through that, because it was not easy on them at all.
So there you go, guys. I did some checking. I want to check on the stats. The DIA storm total, we're talking about that storm that was pre-Christmas, December 20 and 21st, was 20.7 inches. Mm. And for snowfall since December 1st, 45, just over 45 inches. Season total, nearly 60 inches. And snow in the forecast every day this week, guys.
Interesting piece, Kevin. It really helps me appreciate all the logistics, all the coordinating, all the work that has to go on and that is largely behind the scenes. You know, if you're a passenger, you're inconvenienced, and I don't know about you, I'd be irritated as the Dickens if I was having to spend a night in an airport. I've had to do that before, but you really don't see everything going on behind the scenes to try to keep some order to the chaos. So enjoyed the piece a lot.
Yeah, and they really take it personally too. At another part of our interview, I remember Mr. Lee saying that you know, they had their office, they were stuck there too, and they had their offices to take refuge in, but every now and then they would sort of walk out in the terminal and remind themselves that there were nearly 5,000 people out there, and they were the ones that were there to take care of those folks. And I appreciate their time for an excellent interview, David.
Yeah, Bill Murray is the most traveling of the Weather Brains crew that I could certainly think of. Have you, Bill, ever had to spend more time than you wanted in an airport because of weather?
My greatest story is when the President's Day snowstorm hit Reagan up in Washington, D.C., and I drove like a maniac that morning to get there, only for the airport to close and spend the next 3 days in the Marriott courtyard. So I was lucky to get there and lucky to get a hotel room, because I really look at those long-range models when I'm planning my travel, because, you know, there's times you know not to fly through Dallas, there are times you know not to fly through Chicago, and Denver is pretty much verboten for me in the wintertime.
But you know not to trust those long-range models.
But you at least get the trend. And I see a big snowstorm out west, I'm staying away from Denver, that's for sure. But I tell you, in Indianapolis last Sunday, we had a little 4-inch snow, and there's not much more impressive than one of those snowplow lines going down a runway. Because you know, there's like 10 or 12 snowplows lined up across there going. And, boy, that was impressive. It reminded me of the movie Airport back from, I think, 1975 or something. You know, when Joe Kennedy had to get out there and move the plane off the runway. That's pretty cool stuff.
Absolutely. Anyway, Mr. Spann, you're not putting too much confidence in the long-range models either.
Look, you know, the model deal, I think they have reasonable skill at showing patterns. You know, when it comes to specific events, I think you can forget that beyond 7 days. But pattern recognition, yeah, I think you can look at that.
Okay, fair enough. Hey, we got a couple of emails into the email box, but let me qualify something here right quick. We got a whole pounding of email from folks responding to the firestorm from last week, but these are questions that really more pertain to what our netcasts are normally about, so I thought I would run these by you, Mr. Elliott and Mr. Spann. Alston Keith writes, how did James and JB cross paths and meet each other? Either of you guys?
I used to work as JB's yard man out in the grounds of his place out there in the northeast part of Birmingham. So, you know, he was a great boss and paid well and, you know, always gave me something cold to drink when I got hot out there.
Pushing that push more.
I first met JB when he was with the National Weather Service. JB worked here in Birmingham at the Weather Service office for over 30 years. And when I came to Birmingham Television in the late 70s, I was very young and not very smart, and he kind of took me under his wings and taught me a lot, and he has been my mentor. Some of my cherished moments in this business were driving from Channel 13 down to the Weather Service at 11 West Oxmoor Road.
Fourth floor.
Fourth floor, man. Swing through the Hardee's drive-thru on the way down there and have a Hardee party at the Weather Service with JB and the gang. That was just some great memories back then.
James would call up and ask, what did I want from Hardee's? And I would tell him, everything on page four.
Fair enough.
I think we kept that Hardee's in business, James, the times we spent at the Weather Service.
I noticed about the time the Weather Service moved down to the Shelby County Airport, that thing closed up. So that's definitely it. But, boy, JB could suck down those sandwiches. Man.
Life, I mean,
you just keep your arms and legs away from his mouth.
Life changed with the big move. JB, maybe you can answer the second part of Mr. Keith's question to us. Is there any reason why all National Weather Service forecasts, advisories, and statements are written in all caps?
That went back to the old clanking teletype days, and I do not know why they still do that, because everything is computerized now, but you're right, they're in all caps, but I don't know why.
Just the way it's always been. Brian, you want to kick in anything on that? Any ideas?
Yes, it's just the way it's always been.
Ah.
And when I was in the Weather Service, I used to do things in lowercase just to irritate the crap out of anybody I could.
Brian, don't beat around the bush. Just come out with
it. Tell us how you really feel, Brian.
And I hate ellipses. And I used to use commas, again, just to irritate anybody in Fort Worth, the regional office, or Washington, D.C.
James, this guy is a black sheep.
Wow. I mean, he's going
to post. You probably hate half my blog posts. They use ellipses more than anybody on the planet.
You can use them all you want to. I just like to use commas.
Okay, now we know, in any event. Next time on Weather Brains, ahead of his time, always scheming up ideas and sharing them with the scientific community. We look at a man who loved weather and whose scientific accomplishments show up on your television set every night.
He wasn't a person to try to take his research concepts and go and hide away and protect them. He would go and inspire many people with his ideas.
In the 1960s, satellites were drawing immense attention for their ability to look at the Earth and to help us learn more about weather. But there were challenges, like how to capture reliable images. Werner Sumi had an idea for a type of photography that had never been tried before.
He had the vision that this would make a big difference, and then he came up with a way to actually do it by taking one line of a picture across the Earth on each spin and then moving the mirror and getting the next line and continuously doing that to build up an image of the Earth.
Sumi's idea forever revolutionized the field of meteorology and the science of remote sensing. But it was only one of many valuable scientific contributions he would make. Hear more about Dr. Werner Sumi's life from people who worked with him. It's a Weather Brains Extra, the father of satellite meteorology. And it's next time on Weather Brains. We hope you can join us for that. If you'd like to contact the Weather Geeks at the Weather Company, the folks who do Weather Brains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. And don't forget, if you missed our previous netcast, you missed the news, we have a new toll-free telephone number. You can call and leave a voicemail. The dime is ours. Call us at 888-247-8627. That's 1-888-247-8627.
I want to ask JB and Brian, it's almost not possible to spend your entire career in one office in the Weather Service anymore, is it?
Hardly.
But JB did it.
JB did it. I didn't follow in his footsteps. I'd have to take off my shoes to count how many offices I was in.
Wow.
I had a chance to go to Chattanooga as to head the office, but I declined. I didn't. I just like to stay in one place.
We're glad you did.
All right, a reminder that the opinions expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. And some of the music provided during this netcast came from The Pod Show, PodSafe Music Network, online at music.podshow.com. For the Weather Brains crew, James Spann, Bill Murray, J.B. Elliott, Brian Peters, and Kevin Selly, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us again for our next Weather Brains netcast. Weather Brains is copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Adios. Enjoy the show, gentlemen. Thank you all for taking part.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Keep out of trouble, Brian. Don't cause any more trouble there, bud.
No.